hour. Now, it's really hard these days to keep up with all the news relating to the current COVID situation. There's the R number, social distancing rules, lockdowns, infection rates, testing, vaccines, of course, face masks, face coverings, an endless stream of opinions and some facts, and definitely a lot of fiction as well. So attempting to cut through the fog here on Breakfast, we'll bring you some of the country's leading experts in science and medicine. Many of them are based here in Merseyside. So for his weekly roundup, Professor Bertie Squire, Dean of Clinical Sciences and International Public Health at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, also Honorary Consultant in Infectious Diseases at the Royal here in Liverpool. Bertie, welcome to the programme once again.
Morning, Snelly.
The R number, let's just start with the R number, the reproduction number. A news article yesterday showed that the rate of coronavirus infections in the community in England was significantly reduced before lockdown eased in May. I mean, I was quite surprised when I read that. Can you just explain again how the R number actually works?
Sure. So the R number is an estimate of how many people will be infected by one other person. So if you think about one person on average infecting one other person, then that would be an R number of one. And if you've got one person infecting less than another person, and that only really works if you think about 10 people and then them infecting fewer than 10, The R number is less than one. So that's how it works. And if the R number is less than one, then the epidemic dies away and the numbers fall. If it's above one, the numbers rise and you get an epidemic.
So the data collected for this report then just showed how important lockdown was. Lockdown worked.
Absolutely. I think the thing that's really important about this article, a number of things to say. One is that it's a preprint article from scientists at Imperial College, and they measured the community prevalence of SARS-CoV-2 in the month of May. Now, remember, a preprint means that it's not yet been peer reviewed. Nonetheless, it looks like a really important and well-designed study. Members of the public were approached by letter and asked if they would provide a swab test. And results on more than 120,000 individuals in England were analysed. And they showed several important results. The first was that the overall reproduction number was estimated to be 0.57, so half, basically. And that was lower than was thought at the time in May. And the data that we had in May were based on what we call back calculations from hospital admissions and deaths. So this is the first time we've actually had an estimate from community study itself. So I think that's why that's really important. It's a more accurate estimate. And it showed that actually the lockdown had achieved a great reduction in the R number slightly earlier than was expected. The other important thing to say...
No, do carry on. I thought you'd finished, but do carry on.
Yeah, no, so what I was going to say is that the same study will in time give us information on what's happened to R in the month of June, when we'll be able to see whether there's a community effect of the easing of the restrictions, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, and it's easy though, isn't it, to read these reports and say, that's it now, we're okay, we've cracked it, we're on our way now. And, you know, it's really important that we do not do that. And everybody talks about the woods, and we're still in the woods. Yes, we are. Yeah. But when we do read positive news about coronavirus, you know, it's just human instinct to say, we're all right now.
Yeah, well, I think there's another piece in that study which is worth mentioning in that context, and that is that about 70% of those people who tested positive, remember this is a letter that went out to people's homes, so this is not sick people, 70% of them who were tested positive reported no symptoms in the 7 days prior to testing positive. So what that tells you is that there are, as you know, we discussed early on in this epidemic, how many people didn't have symptoms but were walking around with the infection. And it does show that there's a significant number of people who won't have symptoms and are walking around. And that's why we continue to say, look, we might have small numbers, but this is an infection that is possible to be in the general community. And therefore, social distancing, hand washing and face masks and face coverings remain really important.
I'm glad you mentioned the masks and the coverings there as well. Very much in the news this week. From a week tomorrow, it will be mandatory in shops, but not pubs, restaurants and not in offices. Why the exclusion of let's say, offices, for example? They're enclosed spaces.
Yeah. So maybe to start with, it's worth remembering that the risk of infection is related to the number of interactions that you might have with different people in a given time period, say a day. So the higher the number of different people you meet or come close to in a day, the higher the chance of meeting one of those that I just mentioned who might have the infection. Mm. So in shops where there's large numbers of different people circulating in any given day, the chance of infection is higher than in an office where, by and large, it's the same people who come into contact with each other on any given day.
I see.
So if you remember, in both offices and shops, social distancing, high standards of hygiene and increased surface cleaning are important. In offices, it's also more feasible to add additional measures such as fixed teams or partnering to further reduce the risks of mixing. Yeah. So it's really all to do with the risks of mixing that this is.
Yeah, it's spot on. I mean, we've worked all the way through, Bertie, but we've worked with the same group, the same people, the same team, the same colleagues. So that's the point you were making there. And we've also seen it in the news this week that plans are afoot to cope with a possible spike in winter. And you can understand why people say, you know, please, why are you talking about a spike in winter? We're only just trying to get through this. But we know a lot more now about this virus than we did last winter, so that should count in our favour, should a spike occur.
Absolutely. We do know more, and I think because we know more and because we are trying to learn the lessons of this last spike, we need to be urgently planning ahead, because we don't want to be in that same not so well prepared position that we were with an unknown virus. So it's worth remembering, in a typical winter, NHS and social care systems in recent years are normally at or close to full capacity. And that's because of things like infectious diseases such as seasonal flu. And also more people suffer serious health problems in the winter, like heart disease, stroke and asthma flare-ups. And then if it's really cold, you get more accidents. So there's more trauma, you know, people slipping on the ice, that kind of thing. So we know that that's what our usual winter situation is like. We also know that COVID-19 will transmit more easily in the winter when we're more indoors and there's more, there's more interaction indoors. And the mathematical models suggest that the numbers will rise again in the autumn and potentially peak in January, February next year. Mm. And if we don't do anything, that peak could be as bad as the one that we had. So we need to also recognize that it would be really difficult for us to achieve the same level of mass reorganization of the NHS that we did. And we will also still be dealing with a backlog of the routine care. Think of all the things that we've put on hold through the spring. And then finally, we might at the same time have seasonal flu. So if we've got people who've got symptoms that are fever, cough, breathlessness, we'll be having to think, is that COVID or is that seasonal flu? So it's better for us to think now, what can we do to be prepared for that? What can we do to make sure that that spike is as flat as possible? And that's why people are talking about it now, because we want to make sure the PPE is in place.
Sure. Sure.
And that we've got all those things that we weren't so good at this last time.
Well, we're getting our ducks in a row, really, aren't we? You know, because the last thing we want is... And just finally, as well, we're going to get your crumb of comfort in a second, but the flu jab, the rollout for the flu jab as well, that could be dramatically increased this year too, just to alleviate the possible problems that you mentioned before. And there's still a lot of people who say, well, I don't think I'll bother. But, you know, it's really important to get that if you are, you know, a vulnerable person, for example.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. It relates to that last point I was making. If we do get a seasonal flu epidemic, remember, we know seasonal flu. We know that it is associated when it comes with excess deaths. We know that we can reduce the number of people who get severe disease with the flu jab. And so if we've got this possibility now to get the message out, you know, when the time comes for the call for seasonal flu, definitely take it up. You want to reduce, we want to reduce that risk of people getting sick and needing extra care when we might actually have quite a strain on the system.
All right. And finally, your crumb of comfort for this week. Bertie, what have you got?
Well, I'm sticking with this theme of numbers of admissions to the hospital. Having just been gloomy about what may happen, I just want to say I'm on clinical duty this month at the Royal on the one main ward where COVID-19 patients are cared for, 3X. And right now, there are only 3 patients with active COVID-19 disease. So that's an indication of how well everyone has done as a community in reducing transmission. In April and May, we had several wards at the Royal caring for many patients with active COVID-19 and several patients needing support for their breathing in intensive care. So we're down to 3. None of them need intensive care. And it really shows what can be achieved when everyone pulls together in the community. So a shout to my colleagues on the ward and a shout to everyone who's pulled together, both in the community and the health and care social system.
Bertie, that's great to know. Thank you very much indeed. And we wish them well. You're all doing a fabulous job. And we're so privileged to have people like you and your colleagues caring for us. Bertie, thanks for your time this morning. Really appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thanks, Tony. Thank you.
He's off to work now. Aww. There you go. Good to know, though, isn't it? Good to know from the people who are actually there and do the job.
Absolutely. On the wards and knowing that the number is probably a lot lower than what we may have thought.
Yeah, straight away. There's 3 on that ward and they don't need intensive care, which is good news. Thank you for that. Right, it's...